That's nice. So, because similar to Sabin yesterday, I also have a very jacky Asahi Linux on MacBook setup for which we are streaming the whole thing over Jitsi, and the MacBook there is on other laptop somewhere else that's doing the streaming. So it clicks or slow. All right. Today I want to talk about ideas and innovation. The reason I want to talk about this is I often teach students in terms of workshops, if I'm teaching something, if I'm doing a writing blog post. And a lot of students come up to me and say, hey, I know how to code, but I don't know what to build. And that to me personally is a very unfathomable idea. I have been doing software development and other things for a long, long time. And throughout that time, I've always had too many ideas to come. I've always had like a flurry of ideas in my back, and I couldn't pick which one to work on. The idea for talk today is about ideas that sell in process. I don't think ideas inherently are valuable. If they were, you would be able to sell ideas, buy ideas. Given that there is no such idea platform in the market, I claim that ideas technically are worthless. And at the end of this talk, hopefully you should be taking some of those ideas home. I'm Nemo. I used to do tech and security things at Razorpay. I am a fossil enthusiast. I've been building lots of cost projects these days. I'm a semi-retired open source developer. You can take a look at the list of my projects on other than projects, in a long, more than a decade ago, I used to be the college and I started this campus student group called SDS Labs, which ended up becoming pretty big. They did a bunch of pretty interesting, both open source and closed source projects across campus and across India. I started InfoSec IITR, which was a CDF team at a campus, which ended up becoming, I think, among the top five teams in India. I used to work at Razorpay in terms of fintech. Did a lot of open source projects there as well. These days, I primarily do run this project called endoflife.date. It's a semantic wiki, community driven, where we track support life cycles of everything under the sun. If I'm speaking too slow, by the way, please slightly raise your hand and I'll try to go slower. Right. So we track things like Debian, things like Linux. And we track their support life cycles, mark them in green, red, orange, so people know when they should stop using, let's say something like Debian Buster, we should stop using in 3 months, at 1 week. I took screenshots yesterday for the day of Friday. There's a famous quote of mine, not famous, there's a quote of from someone on IGN, an anonymous commenter, which I really like, which says, there is no such thing as an original idea. Every idea worth having has been had thousands of times already. The important part here is there's no such thing as an original idea. If there was an idea worth having, if it's a worthy idea, if it's something worth building, somebody would have thought of it already. The reason it doesn't exist in the world is nobody has worked hard enough to actually build it. It's not necessarily the idea that matters, it's truly the execution. It's, if you look at the history of innovation, there's lots of times when people across the globe were working at the same time on similar ideas. When Wright brothers flew across Kitty Hawk and on their first plane, they were not the only persons trying this. The director at Smithsonian, at the same time, roughly a few years before them, tried to build a very heavy, very large flying machine and failed. He was a much more famous person. He had much more funding than them, and yet he failed. The idea of human-powered flight or man-made flight, or putting an engine to a plane and letting it fly, was something that was being tried across France, across England, across America, and other places. Wright brothers just happened to be the first one to put in the effort to actually do it. I'm also an idea connoisseur. I maintain a list of ideas on my GitHub repo. It's called Ideas. You can look it on my website. I've been maintaining it under CC0 license, so you can use it freely. If you pick an idea from this list and you build something, and you let me know, I'll send you a personal postcard. And I've been doing this for more than a decade, and over time, I've come across both interesting ideas and seeing other people riff off my ideas in very interesting, unique ways, which I wouldn't have thought of. So it's this very nice thing to try, curate your ideas over time. Try to figure out what ideas of yours are important enough to work on. I think that is the harder part. There's also another very selfish reason to do this. I don't have enough time in the world to build everything on this list. I will die if I try to build did everything on the list bit, but I will die much before the list finishes. So my personal selfishness is maybe somebody else builds this. You know, I really want some of these things to exist. Maybe somebody else builds this, and then I get to, you know, use their labor for free. Or, you know, if you want to make it paid service, I'll pay you money. Just build it so I can use it. So if ideas don't matter that much, you know, there's maybe hope that execution matters. So here's a nice matrix that says, if you pick an idea, and maybe it's, you mark it as a good idea or a bad idea, some parameters you have, and you cross it against good execution versus bad execution, you pick a bad idea. I will make petrol out of leaves. This was an idea I think somebody mentioned as a scam that ran in India in 2000s. It's called Rama Petrol. It's a terrible idea, of course, terrible execution. It doesn't work. The man went, ended up going to jail, I think. If you pick a good idea, you know, I want to build personal electrical mobility vehicles powered off batteries. And you don't execute it nicely, you get something like Segway. Segway was a company just ahead of its time. They pretty much built what we would consider electric scooters today. They are not that popular today. They were much heavier. The tech didn't exist then. Good idea, bad execution. But on the other side, even if you have a bad idea, I want to build a personal messaging app, right? What will it do? It will let people message. What else will it let do? Maybe we'll have groups sometime down the future. What do you want to run it on? Phone numbers. That essentially was WhatsApp. If there were, I think, 100 other personal messaging apps in the market at the time, they were doing things that WhatsApp wasn't doing at the time. They were doing stickers, they were doing ICQ, they were doing smileys, they were doing fancier groups. WhatsApp wasn't that. The reason WhatsApp worked well was because of its execution. It was fast, it worked on low bandwidth networks, it worked on feature phones, it did a lot of things well. Linux similarly, it's not a great idea. I want to build an operating system. The moment you say it in 1994, it's not necessarily a great idea. Operating systems are hard. Getting to a large group of users is harder. They need a lot of running them on unreliable hardware, which is what Linux ended up doing very, very well by getting other people to write drivers for closed hardware was the execution that helped Linux become successful. You can also have good ideas and good execution, but we can skip. So it's clear, not clear, but as a heuristic, you can have good ideas or bad ideas, but it's primarily the execution that matters. But how do you decide if you have lots of ideas like me? How do you decide which ideas to work on? So the rest of the talk is mostly about figuring out some heuristics for that, how you pick out good ideas versus bad ideas, or how do you pick which ideas are worth your time. We'll do interludes throughout this talk. Just to stay away from all the boring theory, I'm gonna run a timer. How much time do I have? So we'll do interludes throughout this talk. I want to give a bunch of ideas to you so you can pick them and work them on them. Theme for some ideas that I've worked on in my past is standardization. How many of you know RSS? RSS is Real Syndicated Feeds. This is not the Indian organization RSS, this is the other standard called RSS. It essentially is a way for you to consume feeds across the internet, feeds are feeds of content. Podcasts, for example, use RSS to let you know when a new podcast is out. RSS also use web bloggers to let you know when a new blog is out. You can use a feed reader to consume these feeds. It's a very nice format. It works standardized across the internet. However, a lot of internet doesn't like using it. When Twitter launched back in 2009, Twitter used RSS feeds. So you could subscribe to a user's Twitter feed using Google Reader, which also existed at the time. This is not possible today because A, Twitter doesn't have RSS feeds, and B, Google Reader is dead. Thankfully, there are other readers present in the market today, so you can use others. And the RSS Bridge project lets you create bridges to various existing places on the internet for which no such RSS feed exists. So for example, this is one that I wrote. It returns application version updates from the Apple App Store. Another one is, hey, I wanted to, there was a problem of mine. I wanted to get notified whenever a new movie released in Bangalore. So I created up a play showed up in a specific language. And this essentially gives me an RSS feed to use that I can subscribe to that only show me a notification if and when a new play shows up in Bangalore in English. You can create new bridges from scratch. Each of these bridges takes maybe 30, 50 lines of code. But more importantly, there's people who have already requested dozens of bridges that might be worth creating. So as an example here, Facebook events do not expose an RSS feed. So you cannot get notified whenever, let's say, a community or a group that you follow sends you a notification for such a thing without using, let's say, the Facebook app. This is a much easier way to just consume things over RSS. There's also a bunch more bridge requests that you can look at. Similarly, OpenAPI lets you consume APIs across the internet in some standard format. It's a way to document APIs. A thing that I like to do is document closed source APIs using OpenAPI. So this is the OpenAPI official document generator, and it generates out the documentation for the API that I've written, which is for a closed source application called Simple. I use this application, but having such a documentation lets me write code that avoids the use of using this application, but at the same time, it also gives me access to my own data from the app. It lets me, for example, call the API V2 transactions API, get access to all the data without ever having to use the app. The app, of course, doesn't have a nice CSV export or data export, but I can use this to actually get that. GDFS is General Transit Fee Systems. Transit systems like metros, buses across the world have this standard format in which they can declare, hey, a bus is going to show up here at this time. This is the route it's running on. This is the stops on the way, etc., etc. India doesn't have a nice GDFS feed for many of its transit systems. For example, Bangalore Metro doesn't have a transit feed. Kochi Metro, I think, has one. But a nice project to do is to look up what transit systems in India or other places are missing transit feeds and create them. Okay, back to how do you pick interesting ideas. Interesting ideas worth having are almost always driven by problems. So what I want you to try is to seek out problems. These should be your own problems, and the advantage of picking out your own problems is the moment you figure out a nice solution for it, they will give you a high. It's like this slow completionist achievement that you get. Hey, I'm using my own solution that I built for a problem that I'm facing. Somebody mentioned here yesterday that they are forced to use WhatsApp because your campus gives out notifications only via WhatsApp channels. And I thought, hey, maybe that's a problem. If I was facing, I would like to just figure out a solution in which I could distribute this WhatsApp notifications over RSS, over Telegram, over emails, or other mediums, wherever stewards might be. And that would avoid the need of using WhatsApp for me. Maybe other people are also interested in this. I saw posters for Campus Hero, I believe, in the hostel that I'm staying, which mentions, hey, would you like to accept deliveries for your hostel while sitting in your room? We'll make a delivery for you because that's a problem that we face and probably you also face. And I don't know what the business model is. But it seemed like a nice problem that somebody had and came up with a solution. So but what I want you to do is to build for yourself. That's the easiest way to pick out ideas worth working on. Problems that you're facing, figure out solutions that work for them and build for yourself. You're building primarily for you as your own audience. You are the audience of one, and that is probably like the best audience you can work with. If I build something and I go to my mom and ask her for advice, hey mom, I built this for people on the internet, even though she doesn't understand what I've built, she will be not amazed, but she'll be very proud of what I've done. She'll give me perfect feedback. You want to use your own idea. It's called dog fooding in some circles, and the idea is the closer you are to the problem, the better solution you can possibly come up with. And once you've come up with a solution and you're using it daily, you're the perfect person to actually critique that solution. Hey, maybe you built out WhatsApp notifications for a campus and send them across Telegram and realize, hey, I don't actually use Telegram that much, or maybe you push them to Discord and you don't use it that much. And you realize, hey, I actually check my email every day in the morning. Maybe email is a better medium for me. So build for yourself. And that's just not me. This is Paul Graham. He's the founder of Y Combinator, world's most famous startup accelerator. From one of his regular themes is to figure out how do you figure out better ideas for startups to build. My talk is more general, how do you figure out ideas for projects or art that you want to build. But even for startup ideas, he says it's best way to get startup ideas is to not to think of startup ideas. It's to look for problems, preferably problems you have yourself. The closer you are but figuring out what problems matter in your life, the better you're seated to figure out ideas that work. As another interlude, how do you solve your own problem? Does anyone know this famous coffee pot? It's, I believe, presently in a museum in Poland and Russia. This coffee pot was the reason behind the world's first webcam. Back in 1994, researchers who were pretty much, you know, early days of the internet and the internet existed, they had a continuous problem. The room that they sat in did not have a coffee pot, and the pantry was across the hall. The problem they faced was you'd go and run, go to the pantry, and turns out nobody has made coffee or the coffee isn't there, so you would end up making coffee. But sometimes you'd show up and, hey, there's a pot of coffee left, so you could just use that. And that was like the nice thing. You go to the pantry, you find out, hey, there's hot coffee already, I can just use it. The problem was for them was, I do not know whether or not there's coffee in the pot till I walk there. So what they ended up doing was they put up one of the earliest cameras running across a video card, and they ran it across the network using X11. So it was, the application was called X11. It would just beam out your whatever view the camera was seeing over to the other room. So the people in the other room could see, hey, the pot has coffee, but the pot doesn't have coffee. This was in 92. By the time 1994, when web browsers showed up, and they realized, hey, you could take a screenshot of this and put it on the internet. And that ended up becoming what's currently known as like the world's first live web stream of a coffee pot. It ended up solving their own problem. Similarly, I built this project called Emoji Every Day. I run this new small tiny news website, and this is today's 24th March, and it shows me nicely. One of the things I wanted to do with my website was, hey, I think the date by itself wasn't looking nice to me. I wanted something nicer to go with the date. I think I had the idea around Gandhi Jayanti when I thought, hey, maybe we should have some symbol over there. I think Christmas. Maybe we should have a Christmas tree that shows up on 25th of December. And the idea obviously grew further. I thought, hey, you know, why should I stop at Christmas? Maybe I should have confetti on New Year. And then maybe I should, you know, on Republic Day, maybe we should have like an Indian flag. And then I thought, maybe I should take this further. So I ended up making something called an emoji calendar, which basically shows you various days that happen across the world. So for example, 15th August is India's Independence Day. But also, did you know, 25th of July is, if I were, World Drowning Prevention Day. I picked up dates from all across. Some of these are holiday observances, some of these are UN days, etc. But it was a problem that I faced. I wanted to make like a quirky, tiny, poor man's Google Doodle. I ended up becoming into a project that said, how do I track this better? I want to this nice illustration about the corona pandemic and what various politicians in power said at various times. So for example, on 17th April 2021, a prime minister said, have never seen huge crowds of a rally. That's the farthest, lightest post point. I thought it was a really neat illustration, you know, the ability to show what our politicians are doing as the corona pandemic was rising and rising, and especially around the COVID. I thought, hey, maybe I should build an interactive version of it, which would have, you know, you would hold at a point and it would show you various news articles, actual articles that happened over time, instead of just picked out quotes. I ended up building it. I don't have a demo of it, but this led me to an interim solution, which was just creating a data set of Indian news articles about COVID. From, I think, 2019 to 2021. So solve your own problem, and you might get into rabbit holes that go further. Lots more problems that you can solve. I believe yesterday we had a session on, I would like to go to a CT scanner that runs free software. That is a real problem. Someone go ahead and solve it. I would personally like to be able to book autos at Bangalore using free software. I cannot. Somebody figure out what Namayatri is doing behind the back and write leverage software. I tried to run Postmarket a few times, and I didn't have a journaling app. I would very much like to have a journaling app on mobile, on Linux mobile devices. You have a very old Android phone that doesn't run Lineage, figure out how to port Lineage or Postmarket OS to it. Run a search engine for your hobby. I have a hobby of board games. I ended up making a search engine that just searches for board games in India because they're super hard to find. I think Subin's idea yesterday was to build a PDF converter that fixes indie font ASCII issues. If I could just give somebody a PDF, probably, you know, just create a million, thousand of them from old Indian codes, and then give it to the service, and magically output is PDF files with fixed Unicode, so they're searchable and indexable and I can read. That would be great. Solve your own problems. This might be a problem you're facing. Look for those problems. Back to theory. How do you want to solve those? Is trying to figure out multiple cheap solutions. Multiple is important. You don't want to blindside yourself into the first solution that you come up with. You want to be able to think of multiple approaches to solving this. You know, the coffee pot example, there could have been other ways. There could have been just writing a hypertext protocol that shows whether or not the coffee is available. People ended up making that as a joke later on. But the cheapest, most efficient, easiest way for them to do it at the time was to just run a webcam, and that ended up happening. So try to, cheap over here doesn't necessarily mean cost. Cheapness could be in terms of your effort. Cheapness could be in terms of the amount of people you need to convince to actually build a solution. Figure out the, we have this word called proof of concept. Figure out what the POC for your specific solution is, and try out, figure out what are multiple of those. Let me try to stop my screen on stream again.
Nothing happened.
No, I think it was.
Did it just blur?
I'm sharing my screen. Yeah.
It doesn't. It says Nemo's screen, but it's blurred. One second.
Keep going.
Wait, one second. I'll rejoin the meet, and then we'll probably rejoin.
Sure. The other idea that I want to mention, my slides don't have many words, you don't need to look at that. The other idea I want to mention is the adjacent cost. We're trying to build up something. There is a hierarchy of things that have led to that particular creation. And this is a common idea in the history of innovation. You need, for example, the ability to have personal computers. You need the ability for these personal computers to have some graphical displays. You need the ability to have network computers across the internet. To have network computers in general, you need to have ARPANET, for example, before you can build the web. These are like a precursor technology. So figure out what is the adjacent possible, means what is the next possible thing that that is just outside the sphere of what has been built today. It's very easy to look at in hindsight and say, hey, you know what, we needed fast mobile systems, we needed smaller chips, faster chips, better battery life, small touch display, touch screens, to be able to build Angry Birds. Right? Angry Birds is not possible unless you have touch screens that are fast, have fast refresh rates and so on. It's easy to look in hindsight, but the try to do it in the reverse, try to figure out what are the adjacent possibilities of today, what's just outside the sphere of what has been built. Working back. The next little loop, create data sets. This is also a common theme of what I've been doing. But you should also look at creating what data sets actually. I end up creating India news on COVID data sets just because I wanted to solve a problem. Maybe there's a problem you want to solve, maybe there's a problem that a researcher wants to solve, and they don't have a relevant data set. Thing that I was trying to do was build a better search engine for addresses or something in India. And I realized India has alternative spellings. Because you can't expect somebody search engine to know by itself that Uttaranchal is now being renamed to Uttarakhand, and that Chauraha is the same as Roundabout, and so on, right? And various versions of these spellings exist across various ethnic languages. I created up this list, it's not comprehensive, but you could try to creating more data sets similarly that are helpful to other people. Every day I try to use OSM versus Google Maps, and I notice, hey, there's a mismatch, some nice places only exist at one end. Maybe there should be a page that shows OSM contributors. There's a data set of places that happen to be on Google Maps that are well-reviewed, or maybe just restaurants, and they're not on OSM. And if I saw this, I would pick things out of this list, go take photos, add them to OSM. Another theme is multidisciplinarity. Some of the best ideas in the history of innovation have happened because of people who have come up across multiple disciplines, not just mathematicians or physicists, but also everyday people. The Wright brothers were not scientists. They had an engineer sister, and they had these what working skills are we need to actually send out the plane. But how do you actually enforce multidisciplinarity in your life? How do you do this? You go out of your circle of just being engineers. Go meet photographers. Talk to them what they are curious about. Go move to a city. Cities have been the melting pot of civilization. That is the best way for you to get new experiences and build the kind of networks that are needed to actually innovate. Another word that is borrowed from biology is acceptation. How many of you know what a jugaad is, the thing that drives on a boat? A jugaad, you've probably seen it, is you take up a diesel engine, which necessarily isn't a pump engine, or rather from a borewell or something that would pump up water. But an engine at the end of the day is something that takes up fuel and rotates, right? You take up an engine that isn't necessarily meant to be on the road, you put it on a chassis, and you drive your bike with it. It's a terrible hack. It's an acceptation. There's essentially a word that comes from biology in terms of features that have been selected for a different purpose in natural selection that end up doing something else. The most common example is that of feathers. Feathers in birds were not meant to fly when they evolved the first time. They were meant to actually just be reduced weight, among other things. It ended up helping, and natural selection obviously has a way of figuring out, hey, this also ended up being helpful to flight, and that is how flight came about. So acceptation in terms of what you want to build is figuring out how to look at ideas in a different light. How can you use things in different ways? How could you use RSS feeds to not just run podcasts, but other things? You could come up with a cluster base. Next interlude. I'm running slightly fast to stay in time. Steal ideas. Best artists steal. That's what Picasso said. You don't need to necessarily work with your own ideas. You don't necessarily have to have problems. You know, maybe you could find other people that have problems. There's these nice sites. The site called About Ideas Now. It tracks about pages, ideas pages, and now pages, which is another thing, across, so I think, 6,000-ish personal websites. So you could just filter for ideas, go to some random person's page, and see what ideas they are curious about. What people would like, a Fediverse podcast discussion app. People would like a community Wi-Fi network. Somebody would like to have adoptable games, Neopets. Somebody would like to have a four-day week job board. There are other people, there's people who have Chrome extension ideas on the Substack, a newsletter where you can subscribe and he sends you a weekly newsletter of what ideas people have posted on other places. Please, somebody make a Chrome extension for this and so on. Y Combinator, the startup incubator I mentioned earlier, runs a request for startups. These are much more startup-y ideas, but also much more ambitious in scope. This would include applying machine learning to robotics, bring manufacturing back to America, and so on. Next, if you've never heard the Eureka story, the story goes, Archimedes was sitting in his bathtub, and he was playing around, and that was the moment when he figured out the principle behind buoyancy, which is, you know, you move put something down and it displaces the same volume of water, and so on. As the history goes, they say he ran out naked out in the streets to actually run up to the emperor and tell him of a very important, interesting discovery that he had made. And he shouted, "Eureka, Eureka, I found it." That was a lie. That didn't happen. History across innovation has shown that innovation doesn't necessarily happen in, you know, one bright moment of light bulb that shows up and tickles in your mind and you're like, hey, now I know what to do. That is not how it works. Another similar story is that of James Watt, who was said to have invented the steam engine. They say he, when his mother was brewing up a teapot and he saw the teapot going up, the counter of the teapot going up and down, and said, hey, this is steam doing work and maybe I should do something with it. That didn't happen. There were multiple steam engines that existed before James. There were people using them to actually put out water from coal mines. There were people doing attempts to run, use steam engine to actually move locomotives and so on. That is, Eureka is a lie. You need to focus, the best way of innovation happening is to see of them as the distributed sets of people working on it at the same time, followed by maybe some few important breakthroughs, and those breakthroughs becoming much more relevant over time. people, when Henry Ford made cars, he will say, hey, he said, you know, he was the first person to bring about cars to every person. But there were people already building and driving cars across the globe at the time. They were just meant to be for rich people because they were just seen as too costly. Everyone said, hey, at the time, steam cars and electric cars were actually seen as more possible. So do not be, do not wait for your one right moment of flash. You will not have it. Be ready for serendipity. Some ideas have serendipity involved in them. You don't know. You might be working on something, figure out something else. But you need to be at the right place at the right time to actually make use of the serendipity. Example is that of Goodyear, who ended up figuring out how vulcanized rubber works. He was trying to figure out ways to make rubber more stable. In his workshop, he accidentally dropped sulfur onto a batch of rubber. That rubber ended up becoming more stable, and that was the history of how vulcanized rubber came about. It would have inevitably been figured out by somebody else, but the fact that he was actually looking forward, he was actually in the workshop and researching for those things was more important than that one bright moment of light, or rather that one accident that happens. Next interlude is about my own ideas. I've been trying to build a scope semantic search engine. There's lots of ways for you to semantically produce and structure your data on the internet. These are primarily used by people for SEO because Google will show up your events nicely, your products nicely. Maybe they have screenshots. Yeah, so for example, if you have, if you mark up your recipe as a recipe using semantic HTML, this is how Google will show up your results because Google can figure out, hey, it's a recipe. It can figure out the number of ingredients. It can figure out how much time it takes. And Google is able to show you a nice rich snippet is what they call it. This exists across the internet for a lot of things. I'll show you. There's lots of standards for how do we create these schemas. And these include things like creative works. You can create schemas for books, movies, persons, events, and so on. All this already exists on the internet. But there's no easy way for me to just go to Google and ask, hey, are there any events that you see that are happening in Bangalore that involve running? Google knows all of this, but there's no way for me to structure research for that. Google has very detailed structured results in its database that says, you know, this is where the event starts, this is the duration of the event, this is the exact location within Bangalore where they happen. MapView would, for example, be nice for me to be able to say, hey, this is a list of events that are happening in museums across Bangalore over the next week with a nice map. So this is what I'm, you know, this on the back of my list of things I want to build. You can also go to capnico.org/areas. I'll not go there yet. We have project hopping. You don't necessarily want to just limit yourself to working on one idea at a time. The advantage you get from hopping back and forth between ideas is that your progress carries through. Learnings that you have learned, not just in terms of, you know, your technological learnings, but also other soft learnings you might have. You might have figured out how to work better with your collaborators. You might have figured out how better to communicate. You might have figured out how better to raise funding. There are other learnings that might show up in due course of time as you work on different projects. It's important to also consider, hey, maybe it's a good time for me to go back to that idea that I previously worked on. There's an idea called back burner problems. There's a nice video by Jack Hank on how he treats, how he came up with the idea, how he has this, this idea about a mathematical problem called the mosaic problem, and how he kept this idea in the back of his head as he was studying math throughout his university. And looking at the same lens, same problem statement that he had, I wanted to figure out a specific mosaic problem and tiling problem across various sets of mathematics as, you know, studied one course after the next course, after the next course. And all of those gave him unique insights as to how he could work on that mosaic problem better. I do this similarly with like board game problems. I play a lot of board games, and I always, every time I come up with something new, some new ML AI thing, I'd be like, hey, maybe this could help me figure out a better AI model for my board game. So keep back burner problems, problems that are always in the back of your mind when you're learning something new, when you're learning a new subject, a new course, a new curriculum, a new technology. Try to track it back to what you've been, what's your back burner problem, and see if it can help you. Importantly, do not think about feasibility of your solutions very early. Do not think about money. the thing that you should instead think about is interest. Is, does this idea interest me? Is this worth my time? If I build this, will I use it? Your nearness to the idea is probably the best metric for best guess for success that you might have with a specific idea. Do not, if you, the moment you try to bid for money, you reduce the scope of problems that you might work on by a lot. A lot of startups that ended up making millions of dollars did not have a monetization plan at the very start. Facebook, Google, for example. But so even if you are driven by money, you want to, you know, have cool, smart, interesting startup ideas that will make you $1 billion in the future, do not chase money. Chase interesting ideas, chase interesting problems that you're facing, chase interesting tech that you might want to build on. Another hacks. Hacks have, the word hack has many definitions. One of the many definitions is by using something that exists in creative, inventive ways, figuring out ingenuity as to how it can be done. I run this project called BLR.vote. It's a voting helper registration website. The site was essentially for people to be able to register to vote in Bangalore much more easily. And the common problem that people face is how do I get an address proof? Not many people in Bangalore have address proofs. This is especially true of women because the rental agreements might end up being in husband's name in India. So I figured out a very creative hack. I realized that the post received from post office counts as valid address proof. If you have any piece of post, it may be a parcel, maybe whatever, if you have received something from India Post and it has your name on it and it has your address on it, you can use that as your address proof. But that's only valid for ECI's voter ID rules. So I decided, hey, you can just fill up a form. I will send you a postcard. A postcard costs 50 paisa. A postcard is cheap enough that I can ship a postcard to, you know, 5,000 people and not be down there too much. So I created a service which is get address as postcard proof. Get postcard address proof. So I would just, people would send me, fill up this form. I would get the message. I would type out their address, put it in the postbox, and the next, within a few days, you get your post. You can use that address proof. There's another project called Safe Internet. It's not mine. But the people behind it figured out an important hack, which was Try in India in 2015 was trying to regulate free internet and the idea of free basics came about where Facebook wanted to create a closed free internet of sorts where some sites would be free, some sites would be paid, Facebook obviously being the free site. So people wanted to protest against this, internet should be neutral, pipes, internet is just a pipe, it should be dumb. And the campaign involved essentially at the time figuring out what's the easiest way to get hundreds and thousands of people to actually reach out to try. How do you do that? Build out just a dumb website with a click button that will open up your mailing application for it. You don't need to fill up the form, you don't need to pick anything, you just go to the website and tell me, hey, this is what we have written out in the mail, and you can just, you don't even need to copy paste it. There's one click button, it'll open up Gmail, it'll open up Outlook, it'll open up Thunderbird for you, and it'll let you send your voice and your opinion to try. It ended up, I think Try got millions of mails. Their email jam, email boxes were jammed. They ran out of space. And finally, they ended up taking position that India needs that neutrality. So figure out creative inventive solutions by figuring out how non-obvious ways to use tech. Finally, I think this is closing time. A few recommended readings. First book is by Steven Johnson. It's a book called Where Good Ideas Come From. It covers the natural history of innovation. It covers the idea of Edges Impossible, which I mentioned earlier. A lot of the books, a lot of the innovative ideas that he thinks are like a theme of innovation across time. The next, which I'm currently reading, is How Innovation Works by Matt Ridley. He covers the history of innovation broken down into sectors. So a chapter about how innovation has happened in food, how innovation has happened in transport, how innovation has happened in the energy sector, and so on. It covers interesting ways that people have innovated, and it covers, breaks a lot of bits into how you might think something got invented. The next one is Where Wizards Stay Up Late. It's a book about the origins of the internet. So the internet, you might have heard, came out from ARPANET. ARPANET was a research project at UCLA and two other universities and a commercial company. and essentially professors at USCLA who were staying up very, very late to figure out how to get ARPANET working and how to connect networks across very large distances. Interestingly, goes into the history of internet and how innovation happened back then. Look at Paul Graham's website about ideas. He has a bunch of essays. He covers it both from a startup perspective, as what ideas are worth pursuing if you're interested in startups. Worth reading. The slides will be up on my website on Flash Talks. If you want to reach out to me, my email, Signal, and other things are on Flash Contact. Thank you. Other questions? Yeah. I can do questions, or I can just walk through my ideas. Or like, if we have time at the end, we'll walk through some of my boring ideas.
As you said, I also have a lot of ideas, but I don't have time.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Any tips for people who are working full time, as well as also having side projects, right?
Yes.
So, how do you manage both of them, the timing, or you get into a chaos of no timing, organization, or nothing at all?
I keep moving between projects. So, depending on how busy or free I am, I'll pick out projects that have a less cost or more cost in terms of my time. I'm not very good at it. I don't think I have any concrete advice because I'll go late on deadlines often. And I'll occasionally have like spurts of time where I'm like, oh, I need to sit and figure this out till 3 a.m. in the night. So I don't think I have any ideas, but what has worked for me mostly is to keep switching between ideas and projects that you're working on. And you can have like low intensity projects, high intensity projects. And you can decide, you know, this, if, for example, the Holy Weekend or something, and maybe I have enough free time to actually spend more time on this project. That's sometimes
most of me,
not always.
And also, one other question is that when you start out a project, you will be very excited about that, and over time, the graph is like kind of comes down a bit.
Yes.
So, does context switching help in that way, or is there something else?
I have a very nice recommendation if I can find it. There's Mitchell Hashimoto, he's a creator of HashiCorp, quite recently, but he has a very interesting blog post on how he fixes that. And his solution is to, whenever you're setting up, like, today or tomorrow or the next day working on this project, figure out the smallest possible demoable unit that you will do out of your work. So no matter how small or even how technical the work, figure out the smallest possible demoable thing that you can get out of. And that demo helps you stay motivated. The idea that, you know, by the end of my bank year, I will have figured this, and this will be something that I can post on Twitter, show publicly, show to my friends. So having the demoable thing is important. Otherwise, a lot of time you're grinding and you don't have anything to show by the end of it, and that reduces motivation.
Can we join?
Any other questions, guys?
I will stop.
I just didn't develop. How would you recommend someone acquiring the skills that is needed to solve the problem that you have?
So, I used to say this a long time ago, but there are three ways you can essentially build up knowledge. You can either read, which is, I believe, like the most passive form of learning. I would occasionally like you pick up a textbook and then go through the textbook page by page, but not doing any of the exercises. The second is learn. You'll be like, hey, I'm more actively engaging in this, whatever I'm learning. You go through, you know, YouTube tutorial, you'll just copy paste the commands and figure out what you're learning at the same time. If it's going through a textbook, you'll be doing the exercise at the same time. That's what I call learn. Reading is less efficient than learning.